Every Tuesday in the 3 o'clock hour, we take you to the executive suite. The biggest federal government decisions are, of course, made at the highest levels. And we take you inside the decision-making process to hear federal CXOs and other executives tell you, in their own words, the decisions they have to make, how they're making them, and how they need to partner with industry to execute those decisions. Now, each week during this month in the executive suite, you're hearing from thought leaders both in and out of government and talking about the results of some discussions that we've had with leaders in the federal community. Today, we're focusing on the acquisition community for 2012. Federal News Radio's talked to CAOs and other acquisition professionals across government and asked them about their priorities for 2012, and you can see the results there on federalnewsradio.com. Today, looking at the results of the responses that we got from the acquisition community, my colleague Jason Miller, of course. Good to see you as always.
Always a pleasure to be here.
And Dan Gordon, who is now 5 days into his job tell us what you're doing now, Dan.
I'm the Associate Dean for Government Procurement Law at the George Washington University Law School.
Congratulations on that job. And
thank you.
For someone listening to this station who has been under a rock for the last couple of years, you, of course, just have departed as the Administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy. So nobody knows what we're going to talk about today better than you, I'll say.
Well, I'll certainly say that there's no one that cares more about it than I do.
You're too modest, and I'm grateful for you taking some time to come in and talk about these issues with us today. As we dug into this, Dan, some of the priorities that we see are some of the things that you talked about as you were OFPP administrator. What would you say are the three themes that you wanted people to take away from your tenure there? What were the three things that you wanted to make sure developed, progressed while you were there?
Number one, Francis, without any shadow of a doubt, we needed to strengthen the federal acquisition workforce. That meant all sorts of different levels. It meant hiring more people. It meant training our people better. It meant integrating our people more at the decision-making and their agencies. It meant respecting them more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. Number two, we needed to figure out ways to buy smarter. And we can talk about strategic sourcing mm-hmm. as we go forward in today's conversation. But buying smarter was number two. It really depends on having a good federal acquisition workforce to do it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And number three was rebalancing our relationship with contractors, which, again, has all sorts of components to it. But the fact is that before this administration, we were simply out of whack. We were too dependent on contractors. We were using contractors without thinking. We were much too reliant on them for things that really needed to be done by federal employees.
Was that a policy situation as you approached it, or was it just a circumstance driven by situations like wars and emergencies that FEMA had to deal with, those kinds of things, standing up a new agency in DHS, or was there something else there?
You mean how the prior administration got into it? I think it was a combination of the two. There were crises, the reaction to the terrorist attacks mm-hmm. in September 2001, the various emergencies that were being dealt with, the war in Iraq. But it also fit with an ideology that was perfectly happy to put down federal employees and turn work over to the private sector, even when it didn't make sense. I got nothing against the private sector. We got terrific contractors.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a question of doing it because it makes sense strategically and not because either you're in an emergency and you didn't think about it mm-hmm. or because you're ideologically committed to taking work away from federal employees.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two bad reasons to
yeah.
be doing it.
Those priorities fit in with the elements that you talked about in Mythbusters, and I heard you speak eloquently about Mythbusters a number of different times. I think it's fair to say that other folks will view that as your legacy. Are you pleased with the progress you were able to make on Mythbusters while you were at OFPP?
If I can reminisce about my days at GAO, where I worked for 17 years, the classic GAO report title is
uh-huh.
Progress Made,
yep.
More Work Remains to Be Done,
yep.
as you know.
Uh-huh.
That's where we are on every one of the items. I do think that we turned the ship around over these past 3 years. So I think we're at least moving in the right direction. And until then, we had been moving in the wrong direction. So that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But have we made enormous progress? No. I think we'd be overstating it to say we've made enormous progress.
I will say that the vendors that I speak to tell me on a regular basis that they understand, especially with the kind of the second round that you initiated right before you left, they feel that they have a better understanding of what they can go to agencies and ask agencies to try to do. It's still the agency piece of it where the folks there are a little resistant to changing how they're doing business.
And I will tell you that, in my opinion, listening makes a huge difference. MythBusters grew out of listening, and MythBusters involves listening. It means getting people, the agencies, to listen to vendors. Mm-hmm. It means getting vendors to listen to the people in the agencies. We're dealing with good people. 99% of the people on all sides are very good.
Mm-hmm.
We can get to that 1% when we get to talk about suspension and debarment.
Okay.
But 99% of the people on all sides are good.
Uh-huh.
But getting the people to listen to one another, to have some sort of an atmosphere of trust, is an ongoing cultural change mm-hmm. that will not be solved overnight.
And I think part of that culture change that is just slowly happening, and I think you see it from, for instance, the results of the survey, some of the things we saw here, is for so many years, the federal acquisition workforce, specifically contracting officers and program managers, the cuts that happened in the 90s, I think they're still reeling from those cuts and still feeling, well, are we really sure this is going to be a long-term change, or is it going to be short-term? And then you also need a culture change within the IG and the aforementioned GAO. Until they support that conversation, I think it's going to be hard to get the other program managers, contracting officers, to feel comfortable with that level of trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good point, Jason, I'll tell you. Number one, I am very worried about how things are going to play out going forward, especially with budget pressures. But number two, I'll point out that I was genuinely encouraged to hear on the Hill all through my tenure, including at my very last hearing in front of the subcommittee of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, commitment from both the Republicans and the Democrats and recognition that we need to protect and strengthen the federal acquisition workforce. That was true on the part of the ranking minority member of that subcommittee, Jerry Conley, but that's not the surprise. The greater surprise is that Chairman Lankford on the Republican side
mm-hmm.
agreed that we need to protect and strengthen the acquisition workforce.
Well, I know nobody would accuse Capitol Hill of being overrun by logic, but it seems logical to me if your ideological perspective is government should act more like a business. A lot of businesses spend a lot of money making sure that what they buy for themselves is acquired at the best price, best value, however you want to approach it. So it's encouraging, yes. Logical, though, I think is fair to say.
The real sign, I think, just to go back to your point, is the fact is that the Federal Acquisition Institute Improvement Act got passed. You'll know this maybe a little better than I would, but I think that's the first major acquisition bill that focuses on the acquisition workforce in 15 or 20 years. I mean, I know that there was the service, the SARA came out, but that necessarily didn't focus on the workforce itself.
I understand the point. The FAI Improvement Act is a modest step, but the key point isn't what's in the bill as much as, and I think this is what you're pointing to, Jason, that it had bipartisan support. It is really remarkable. OFPP spends a lot of time working with our colleagues in OMB up on the Hill to be sure that people on the Hill understand, especially the appropriators, how important this is. And I will tell you, I found those sessions satisfying because people on both sides of the aisle in both houses were supportive.
And by the way, all the former OMB, OFPP always say we. If you want to go to Karen Evans or Dan Chenock or Jonathan Brule or
yeah.
keep going back to whoever the first one was back in 1789 or whenever OMB became real, they still say we.
The royal we is perfectly acceptable, Dan. We're going to talk about some of the feedback that we've gotten from members of the acquisition community in a minute. You're hearing from Dan Gordon, former OFPP administrator now at George Washington University, and my colleague Jason Miller. When In Depth with Francis Rose continues in just a minute, we'll be right back.
Virtualization delivers big benefits, but traditional storage and backup can't handle the increased demands of virtual environments. Get on track with EMC Next Generation Unified Storage and Backup, optimized for VMware. Run virtual applications 3 times faster and reduce VMware backup times by 90%. Streamline with VM management and single-step restores. Decrease application storage by 50% and reduce backup storage by 40 to 60 times. EMC products available on GSA through government acquisitions.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com. To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives, Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next. Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Core processors, new HP ProLiant GS servers are an ideal choice for reducing power costs and getting a jump on your cloud computing initiatives. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how the power of HP and Intel can achieve ROI in as little as 2 months. Talk to GovConnection and find out how together they can power your data center into the future. Call 800-800-0019 today.
I'm Jared Serbu. Here's what we're working on for tomorrow's edition of The Federal Drive. Congress is about to come back from a holiday recess. We'll talk with Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings. He's the ranking Democrat on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. And as the Air Force does cleanup activities on its bases in the West and wants to make sure its work is green and sustainable. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Looking at the priorities of the acquisition community in 2012 in the executive suite today and providing some analysis of what we've learned is Dan Gordon, former administrator at the Office of Federal Procurement Policy and a newly minted professor at George Washington University. Do you like academia so far? I mean, I know it's only been a couple of days. But
I do. I will tell you that I was an adjunct teacher at GW Law School during my GAO days. So to come back as the Associate Dean for Government Procurement Law is, in a sense, I feel like I'm returning home in the best of ways professionally.
Well, we're grateful that you will have, hopefully, more time to spend with us as you're doing this.
The best part is I know his commute got longer by a whole 4 minutes, he told me, and he's only working 40 hours a week instead of 80. So right then
so
and there,
you
he's
cut your work week
off.
In half. That's fantastic.
We will see.
Well, let's look at some of the priorities that folks in the acquisition community have told us they're focused on for 2020. 2012. As you look at the results of this that are posted now on federalnewsradio.com, a couple of things jumped out at me as the things that seem to be on the minds of people most. You mentioned acquisition workforce. Folks seem to be agreeing with that. Improve overall contract management's another one, and strategic sourcing seem to be the ones at the top of the list. We'll get into some of the others in a minute, but what do you think? I guess that must make your heart feel warm when you see that the folks that you dealt with the most are thinking the same things that you're thinking as far
Absolutely.
As priorities.
Although I'll tell you, Francis, it's partly because I didn't come to the priorities that we had by sitting in a cave and staring at my navel. I came to them by listening and watching what our problems were. Our problems were, among other things, that we focused for at least a quarter of a century on figuring out who should get the contract.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't focus enough on what comes before that and what comes after that. Coming before that needs to be good acquisition planning. Coming after that is good contract management. So when I see improving contract management, it definitely warms the cockles of my heart.
Talk about strategic sourcing and the progress that you've seen in strategic sourcing over the past, say, 5 years or so.
The short answer is we need to buy smarter, and we've made progress. To go a little bit more in depth, I'd say the government should be buying in a way that takes advantage of our buying power. We're the biggest customer in the world, but our face to industry is often as if we were dozens and sometimes hundreds of medium-sized customers.
Mm-hmm.
Strategic sourcing says, let's leverage our buying power so we're one government customer.
Well, one of the things you bring this up, the one face to the customer, federal CIO Stephen Van Roeckel talked about the one door to a vendor, one vendor door, if you will. And I've talked to some people in the industry, and they're kind of scratching their head. Okay, what does that exactly mean? How's that going to work? I know from my experience, for instance, when you look at supplier diversity in the private sector, them sometimes they have one office that handles supplier diversity. But that's, I think, a little different than one door for vendor. Give me a sense of what you're hearing or from your experience at OFPP. What do you know about what that really means?
Steve Van Roeckel is a terrific guy, and we are very lucky to have him as a federal CIO. A lot of his message is obviously more on the IT space, and I'm going to get over my head if I go there. But in this area, we actually coincide and worked in the very same direction, and that is what he sometimes called shared first. It is crazy for the Department of X to spend a lot of time and money competing a contract, awarding a contract, if it turns out the Department of Z has a contract for the very same widgets or the very same services, and they're perfectly happy to let the Department of X piggyback. Shared should come first. Instead of having two contracts with company ABC, the government should have one contract. To give that one little example.
But that's the basics of, I guess, maybe strategic sourcing. The other piece of it is each agency potentially could have a single front door for a vendor to come through, or all vendors to come through. Is that something that was starting to be developed before you left, or is that something that maybe we'll see in the next 6 or 8 months?
Yeah, I think you're going to want to see how that develops going forward. But in terms of bringing together the government buy, the classic example is blanket purchase agreements. The idea that under the schedules that were created, as you guys both know, in the 1950s, the schedules were supposed to be GSA buying government-wide. But instead, GSA sets up these government-wide contracts, the schedules, but then individual agencies and often individual components within agencies tag on, I think of them sometimes as like barnacles of these blanket purchase agreements onto the schedules so that you can have dozens of BPAs for the very same good or service from dozens of different agencies and components. That can't be helping the government.
It seems to me that that's as much cultural as it is policy, though. How do you convince agencies that they don't need to do all of this stuff that they've been doing, but they apparently think they're doing for a good reason, whatever it may be?
I couldn't agree more. The greatest example from my tenure was office supplies. Persuading agencies that it didn't make sense for them to have a separate BPA for office supplies was an agency-by-agency effort. We and OMB worked very closely with GSA. GSA, though, was doing all the legwork. They were doing the hard work. They were persuading the agencies by meetings, by presentations, that the agency would be serving themselves better.
Mm-hmm.
They would be getting better prices, better service by using the BPAs that are government-wide. This is the first time we've had, essentially the first time we've had government-wide BPAs, these office supplies BPAs. People told us when we started it 2.5 years ago, we'd never succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Something like $200 million in office supplies purchases ran through those BPAs in the last fiscal year. It's a cultural change, but we made real progress.
And this issue is interesting to me because it hasn't come under a lot of public scrutiny. It's not popular or sexy in the mainstream media. But this is the kind of thing that I think if it did, would be the kind of thing that would drive government, the people who want to be critical of government crazy, because it is the kind of duplicative thing that a lot of folks perceive goes on in government all the time. Any number of different vehicles to buy the same kind
Absolutely.
Of thing.
Absolutely. And we made a real difference in reducing that duplication.
Mm-hmm. Looking at that kind of duplication and trying to convince agencies to stop doing it, though. I mean, this is the reason I'd be a poor leader, because my temptation would be to go in and go, guys, this is stupid. Stop doing this. You just can't do it anymore. And that's obviously not an effective approach. What is an effective approach for the success that you had?
We work closely with GSA, and GSA worked closely with the agencies. Let me give you an example. When we were pushing for the use of the government-wide BPAs for overnight delivery, we did a conference call with the senior procurement executives, many of the same people that answered your survey. And we said to them, could you ask around your agency? Find out why your agency people aren't using the BPAs. They did. They came back to us. And they told us, for example, there was a vendor that was saying there's going to be a $1 pickup fee. Every time you want us to pick up a package, you're going to have to pay a fee.
So essentially lying to the customer.
Well, I'm not sure it was lying. But their arrangement was there was a pickup. There was a fee that you paid to mm-hmm. have your package picked up. That was deterring usage. GSA went to the vendor, discussed it. The fee got dropped. The agency's use of the BPA went up.
Mm-hmm.
So GSA listened, asked what the problem was, what's the barrier to usage, addressed the barrier to usage, the problem got resolved.
I think the difference between this attempt for this type of sourcing, strategic sourcing, versus the past attempts was the leadership from your office. And this is something we've talked about before, where I said, well, you should have made it mandatory. And you said, I didn't need to make it mandatory because people saw the benefits. Is that the biggest difference? The fact is that not only did you had both a top-down and a bottom-up approach, because the top-down said, this is important to us, we want you to do it, and the bottom-up said, how do we solve your problems, meaning the people on the ground?
Right. I'm not a fan of making this mandatory. As you know, Jason, GSA was a mandatory source in the 80s. Didn't work well. It caused a lot of resistance. It wasn't good for GSA. Wasn't good for the agencies. This has worked much better. You have Jeff Science, the Deputy Director for Management, raising the strategic sourcing as an important thing in the President's Management Council. You have GSA providing better service, listening better, and you have us, OFPP, running around all the time saying how important this is and addressing the problem.
It seems that just from the survey, the response we got in terms of what are some of the ways to save money, cut spending, reduce contracting, almost three quarters said strategic sourcing was one of the main ways they would do that. And I found that interesting. It seems like that buy-in, it's if you will, the old word, institutionalization's happening.
I think we persuaded people.
We're talking about the priorities of the acquisition community for 2012 on In Depth with Francis Rose today with my colleague Jason Miller and with Dan Gordon, former administrator at OFPP, now at George Washington University. And you can see the results from our CAO survey posted now on federalnewsradio.com. More conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Are you seeing more empty desks at your agency? The Office of Personnel Management says a retirement wave that usually begins in January started a few months early. More agencies are giving their online training and senior executive service development programs a boost. But if your agency hasn't done any of those things, you're not alone. A poll by the Society for Human Resource Management found less than a quarter of organizations nationwide have formal succession plans.
The beginning of another year is one one of the best times to review the state of your financial affairs. Unfortunately, many individuals overlook one of the most important aspects of their financial plan, life insurance. WAIPA, a nonprofit association, provides a free online protection quiz and needs analysis worksheet to help you determine if your family has the right amount of life insurance coverage. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has become the biggest federal agency yet to move its entire workforce to the cloud. NOAA has finished the migration of all 25,000 of its employees to email and collaboration services provided through Google Apps for Government. NOAA and its vendors completed the huge transition in just 6 months, and the agency estimates it saved 50% of the cost it would have incurred if it had built its own email system in-house.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
It is one of our most sophisticated drones, and Iran claims that it was hijacked using a flaw in the GPS guidance system. They got the drone to think that it was in Afghanistan when it was actually still in Iran, and so the drone landed at its home base, thinking it was home base, right, but actually it was in Iran.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Keeping up with the medications. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Especially as people grow older, they amass what amounts to a drug collection. The prescriptions can be daunting, especially with the requirements to take some with food, some without only certain foods, some at only certain times of the day. But at HHS's Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, or ARC, Diane Cousins says being smart and safe with prescription drugs doesn't have to be hard.
ARC has a free guide that answers common questions about sharing your medical information with your healthcare providers, learning about your medicines, and carrying out your treatment plan.
The guide, called Your Medicine, Be Smart, Be Safe, also has a handy wallet card where you can list your medications so you can have the list available if there's an emergency. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Government financial managers are committed to produce timely, reliable, and useful financial information. Stay on top of issues that affect you at AGA's 10th Annual National Leadership Conference, February 16th and 18th at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC features the latest tools and innovations to help agencies do their jobs more easily and more effectively. Don't miss it. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our weekly series for the month of January in the Executive Suite every Tuesday in the 3 o'clock hour, looking at priorities in the federal leadership community today, focusing on the acquisition community and analyzing some of the feedback that we're getting. Dan Gordon, former administrator in the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, my colleague Jason Miller sitting in on the conversation. Dan, one of the questions that we put out there involved the spending cuts on management support services contracts. Jeffrey Zients set the goal at 15%. $6 billion savings was the target. An overwhelming number of the people that responded told us that they're already in on this. I imagine that's another item, data point that we found that makes you pretty happy.
Indeed, Francis. I'll tell you, the focus on management support services contract has a history that itself is interesting. Why did we focus on that? Number one, because it's been an area where growth was really fast all through this past 10 years, even faster than the growth in spending on contracting in general. Number two, when OMB, when OFPP asked the agencies in 2009 to let us know about areas and pilots where they were concerned about overdependence on contractors, they kept coming up with areas that were these very same ones. Mm-hmm. And when we dug in to see how agencies were financing, were paying for this, these services, it was disproportionately time and materials, T&M, which, as you know, is the riskiest method in terms of the cost risk to the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. So those three things came together to cause us to focus on management support services and to say we need to reduce the amount of spending, not to zero, because contractors, again, do terrific work for the government. We need to keep using those the skills that the contractors bring. Mm-hmm. We just need to spend less money.
Well, that point that you make is something that there's a perception, fair or not, that various administrations have different positions when it comes to the relationship between contractors and the government. And you framed it as rebalancing that relationship. Talk about what you think that relationship appropriately looks like.
It is a question that is, like many of your questions, dear to my heart, because I didn't come in and we didn't come in with the idea of bashing contractors, but also not turning over the keys to the store to the contractors. It was a question of finding a balanced relationship. A balanced relationship means being sure that contractors are doing work appropriate to them and not work that's inherently governmental, mm-hmm. for example. It means being sure the government does the contract management. That's the government's obligation to do. Our work doesn't end. The government's work doesn't end when you sign the contract. You got to manage the contractor. It means dealing with contractors who are problems. There are not many of them, but there are some. That's why the suspension and debarment function is so important. But it also means communicating with the contractors. That's why we have the Mythbusters campaign. So it's not, I wish I could say that it's a simple matter of contractors are good or contractors are bad. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's a matter of finding ways to have a more balanced relationship. It's a more nuanced picture, but it's a picture that will serve ultimately the government and the contractors better.
I think many in the acquisition community can argue that this imbalance came from as much as, if you will, the Bush administration's focus on competitive sourcing, even though the government won 80 to 90% of those competitions, as it did from congressional problems of cutting the acquisition workforce in the 90s. I had a very interesting conversation recently with a senior procurement person in the DOD, and they fully admit, hey, we're still trying to recover from those cuts in the 90s. But you brought up a very interesting subject area, inherently governmental, the idea of A76 again. And one of the things that came across from our survey was the idea that we asked the question, what kind of impact will this policy of inherently governmental have? And interestingly, 71% said small impact, 28, almost 29% said a big impact. And those were, that's how it was split up. The other ones we said no impact at all, not sure. Was that really the key piece to that rebalancing? Is the idea of what is inherently governmental, what is critical, and what is highly, what's the third one? Because I've lost it. Highly.
The critical functions and closely
associated. Do you think that was the key piece to it was highly something?
A couple of things. One is, let me just go back even to before I came into the position. At the beginning of this administration, I think a lot of people expected this administration to do the opposite of what you said the Bush administration did. In the Bush administration, there was a tendency to use contractors for everything, whether it made sense or not, partly for ideological grounds, partly for practical grounds. They just needed work done immediately, and they didn't want to hire federal employees. People thought this administration was going to do dramatic insourcing. And I will tell you, I don't think that was the intent, but I can tell you with great certainty, it was never my intent. In my opinion, we needed to do rebalancing, not massive insourcing. I will tell you frankly that I had conversations with people in which I said, insourcing is not the goal. Because there were a number of people that thought that we had an ideological agenda, and they assumed that insourcing was the goal, and they needed to hear explicitly, insourcing is not the goal. So what we were doing was checking to prevent the massive push to outsourcing rather than saying we're going to dramatically reverse the tide and do massive insource.
Roughly, real quick, I just want to find out, do you have any kind of data from before you left OFPP on how many jobs actually came back into the government from the acquisition, at least, perspective?
Yeah, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, Jason, but I can tell you that they are not giant numbers. The intent was never to do enormous numbers, and I felt like the changes we made set the right tone. I don't think agencies feel pressure today not to outsource for some ideological reasons and not to insource. They're exactly where I think they should be, deciding what makes sense and not following some pressure to meet some ideological goal.
Dan, you mentioned suspension and debarment. I want to talk about that when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Dan Gordon, the former OFPP administrator, is here in the executive suite today with my colleague Jason Miller as we analyze the results of feedback that we got from the Chief Acquisition Officers community in the federal government. You can read those results at federalnewsradio.com, and you can hear more of our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Is developing your leadership potential one of your New Year's resolutions? If so, the George Washington University Center for Excellence in Public Leadership can ensure you keep your pledge. With more than 20 years of experience providing professional development to federal government employees, they understand the challenges you face as a public leader. Whether you are a new manager looking to develop your leadership skills or a senior leader preparing to join the senior executive service, the center's variety of courses geared to specific GS levels will help you enhance your abilities to advance your career. Their 2012 professional development programs and workshops are a perfect way to ring in the new year. For more information or to register for a course, please visit leadership-programs.org. That's leadership-programs.org or call 202-994-9522. That's 202-994-9522.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Newsmakers on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
Congressman Joe Walsh, he's chairman of the House Small Business Subcommittee on Economic Growth Tax and Capital Access.
The federal government spends about $40 billion a year on software purchases. And typically through overpurchasing and underpurchasing, they waste about 30% of that number. So there are just some simple little things like this that can become big things in actual savings.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Dan Gordon, former OFPP administrator in studio with me, along with my colleague Jason Miller, talking about the results of our CAO survey. It's posted now on federalnewsradio.com. We asked chief acquisition officers across government to tell us about their priorities for 2012, the things that they're working on, the things that they're thinking about. And one of those is a potential increase of use of suspension and debarment. Congressman Jim Lankford has told agencies that they should increase the use of suspension and debarment. Dan, I wonder, as we talked about a little bit during the break, if there is an appropriate perception of the situation, of the amount of use of suspension and debarment on the Hill. I sometimes wonder if members of Congress don't think there's a whole lot more bad contracting going on than there actually is.
Yeah, I do think, I think that you're right. I think that there's an assumption on the Hill that there are all these bad contractors out there, and that assumption is just not supported by the facts. It is not supported by the facts. The other thing, and this won't shock any of your listeners, is that there's a tendency on the part of some people on the Hill to essentially do the Alice in Wonderland solution just off with their heads, and then we'll worry later on about having a trial.
Wow, I've never heard of that
before.
I know,
it's shocking to hear that people on the Hill might oversimplify a complicated situation.
Like grandstanding? Wow, I didn't know that went on.
It is totally shocking. In the area of suspension and debarment, there is a temptation on all sides, frankly, to say that a company should be ineligible to get a contract or a grant for that matter if it has X problem. And I spent a lot of time up on the Hill and elsewhere explaining why that's not a good approach. What we need to do is more along the lines of what OMB has been doing and what GAO, I should also point out, has called for. And that is be sure that every agency has a staff that are working in the suspension or debarment area. Be sure they have clear written guidance. Be sure that there's an established mechanism within the agency to get referrals to that staff. Because in agencies that have that sort of a good process, and I could name several, the Air Force, USAID has strengthened theirs, EPA has a very good one. In those agencies, you see a good use of the tools of suspension and debarment. There are other agencies that just don't use the tools well enough.
So I'm going to have to stand back and play a little devil's advocate on this one. I think, and I've talked to procurement lawyers, ones like yourself now that are no longer in the government or have spent time arguing with the government, the Justice Department, there's a belief that I think there's a more aggressive push, not just by Congress, but by the administration for suspension and debarment. And let me give you two for instances. There's a memo from, I think, November timeframe from Jack Lew regarding more suspension, use of suspension environment or how the process should work. You probably wrote the memo, so I won't quote it for you. But the other piece of it was the Interagency Suspension and Debarment Committee put out a report that showed the number of suspension and debarments went way up between 2009 and 2010. And I think that has a lot of people worried. And as one procurement lawyer called me, it's the death penalty for any contractor. And I think that's causing some uneasiness when you place it against the Mythbusters campaign, which says, no, no, you should talk more. You should be more collaborative. There's two opposite forces hitting each other.
I very much agree with you, and we were talking about this, I think, in the prior segment. We talked about the nuanced message. It is a nuanced message because we do need to have more communications. That's Mythbusters. But we also need to be sure that every agency, not only USAID and EPA and the Air Force and the others with very good programs, every agency has a vigorous, adequately staffed suspension and debarment office. That's what Jack Lew's November memo talks about. It doesn't say do more suspensions and debarments. It's not saying what we need is public executions. We leave that for the Taliban. What it says is you need a system in place, a process in place, so in the rare cases where you're dealing with a problem contractor, you're going to deal with them appropriately.
But let's be fair. The message is staff up those offices because we want you to use them. You don't staff up an office that isn't being used. And I think that this is one of the things that's created, again, I'm going to go back to it, a really huge uneasiness in the community because of what can happen. Once you're suspended, and let's look at one recent suspension. Iron Bow is suspended by the Air Force. And this happened, I guess, October, November timeframe. And they couldn't win any new contracts. And they were, you know, they have since been unsuspended or
the suspension was lifted.
It's lifted, thank you. I can make up my own word as a journalist. But for that 60 days or whatever it was, I'm sure that the people, the owners of Iron Bow were really uptight.
I mean, I understand. To say the least. I don't know the facts of the case, but I will tell you two things. One is we need to be sure that what we're doing is fair to the contractors. That's why we talk about due process, especially in the context of a company that's proposed for debarment. Suspension is slightly different because suspension is meant to be an immediate protective step for the government where you may not give due process before you actually suspend. But I got to tell you, Jason, companies need to understand that in those rare cases where there is an abuse, the government is not going to take it lying down. You see it in the small business area where when SBA suspended several companies last year, because of abuses associated with the ANC privileges, that got people's attention. And I think that is a healthy thing. And I'm willing to take the heat in those situations, especially because I'm no longer there, I'm willing to have them take the heat. Seriously, I think you got to be willing to say, yes, we're going to have an unhappy contractor, but we're not going to use the tool when it's not appropriate. When it is appropriate, we're going to use it, even if it makes people unhappy.
And I think that's the key. When's it appropriate? And I think there's some gray area. And I think that's what I'm hearing from procurement lawyers who say sometimes there's certain agencies, Air Force, they go too fast to that suspension debarment.
I hear you, but I'll tell you, my experience with the Air Force has not been that way at all. I've seen them as a model in this area.
Dan Gordon is the former administrator at OFPP, now at George Washington University, and he is here to provide some expert analysis of our priorities for 2012 in the acquisition community survey. You can find the results at federalnewsradio.com, and we'll wrap up our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This dream where I'm wading through a crowd. Now and then, someone stops and offers me a new job, and it seems like the opportunities are endless. Soon, I'm doing the work I've always wanted to do, designing smarter energy systems that transform communities, save millions of dollars, and wait, that's no dream. That actually happened. After I got my master's degree in electrical engineering from Capital College.
Capital's master's program in electrical engineering prepares you for some of today's most in-demand jobs. It's conducted online with live streaming audio, so you get the interactivity of a classroom without having to fight traffic to get there. And Capital is one of only 8 colleges and universities nationwide endorsed by IEEE as a provider of a quality engineering education.
I'm living out my dream because of Capital College. It isn't for everyone, but it's perfect for me.
For a virtual info session on graduate programs at Capital College, visit capital-college.edu/radio. That's capital with an O, -college.edu/radio.
Engineering, information technology, and intelligence professionals. When you are powered by innovation and guided by integrity, everything is possible. We invite you to explore a future with the largest provider of IT services, systems integration, and training to the U.S. government. Lockheed Martin will be attending several job fair events the rest of this month in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Stop by our booth to discuss opportunities available with programs in a number of D.C. metro locations and overseas. We are seeking cleared individuals with expertise in engineering, information technology, and intelligence analysis. For details on these opportunities and our events, or to chat live with one of our recruiters, visit www.lockheedmartinjobs.com/WTOP and click on events. Everything is possible with Lockheed Martin. Remember, visit www.lockheedmartinjobs.com/WTOP and click on events. Lockheed Martin is an equal opportunity employer.
When you build the world's most complex ships for the U.S. Navy and U.S. Coast Guard, there's no question you know how to do the hard stuff right. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, it's what we do every day. We are a 125-year-old new company built upon the foundation of two legends, Newport News Shipbuilding and Ingalls Shipbuilding, with an unwavering focus on safety, quality, cost, and schedule. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff done right. Visit HuntingtonIngalls.com today.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We have been talking throughout the hour about the results of our survey posted online on federalnewsradio.com for the acquisition community, taking a look at their priorities for 2012. And expert analysis in this hour from former OFPP Administrator Dan Gordon. And question number 11 in our survey had a little bit to do with you. Will OFPP Administrator Dan Gordon's decision to leave government have an impact on the acquisition community? 71% of the people responding, Dan, said it will have a big impact. The other choices were small impact, no difference at all. Nobody answered that one, by the way. So you obviously made an impact in the time you were at OMB and leading OFPP. What do you take away from that thinking that these are your peers in the acquisition community who are responding.
And let me just say, it was anonymous, so they really could have gone after you if they wanted to.
Yeah, it's not like they couldn't have gotten away with it.
Guys, I'm embarrassed. I will tell you that it's no secret. I adore the federal acquisition workforce. There was nothing I enjoyed more than sitting in our calls with the SPs, the senior procurement executives across the government, or sitting in the chief acquisition officers council meetings, or sitting with the frontline forum, meeting with industry. These were the things that were wonderful in the job.
I got to give you this one, the comment on that question. We got one comment where you could write in whatever you wanted. And somebody wrote, "We will miss Dan. Hopefully his replacement will have the energy and knowledge that he brings." And I could not ascertain that that was your mom that wrote that. But there's no reason why she wouldn't. You mentioned before we came back on the air a story about taking your mother to the White House. I have to hear that story.
I have to tell you. My mom is 91. My stepfather's 95. We took them to the Oval Office a few weeks ago for the official departure photo with the president. And it was a wonderful moment. The president was just incredibly gracious, as if this was the most important event of the week for him. It was just delightful. I did lean over to him at one point and said, "Mr. President, I'm worried my mother's going to hug you." And he promptly said, "I want to stand next to your mom." So he moved over. My mother grabbed onto him and didn't let go for the next 5 minutes. And she was very happy.
And what she said, the Oval Office,
You ask my mom what she thinks about the Oval Office, her answer is, "I never saw it. I couldn't take my eyes off the president."
Wow. What a terrific hour I've had. I've really enjoyed having you here. I hope that your schedule now will permit you to come in from time to time and talk to us about these things. Your insight would be very valuable to us.
With great pleasure, Francis. I will tell you, both you and Jason, I've enjoyed working with you from my federal post. But I'll tell you, at GW Law School, these are the issues that we care about from the legal side, and I'll be delighted to come back with my colleagues from GW Law School, Steve Schooner, Joshua Schwartz, Chris Eukins, and others.
And real quick, I know we're almost out of time, but if you had to make one or two predictions for 2012, since this is all about 2012 priorities, give me your acquisition predictions for 2012. I'm going to put you on the spot.
I hope the president is reelected. I'm confident that he will be reelected.
That's not acquisition.
If he will,
it kind of is.
It'll make a difference to the acquisition community to have someone that is committed to government, that is sensible, and government that works.